have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hom.
I'm Ann Northrup.
And we have a boatload of news, so we're going to talk fast. In the news, just today, Wednesday, a federal court blocked Arkansas's law banning transgender health care for young people.
We continue to rely on the expertise of our lawyers. And in the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, one of their top officials has just resigned over a gay sex scandal. We'll tell you about that.
We're going to remember the life of pioneering California lesbian activist and educator, Sally Gearhart.
And we've come across a lot of firsts this week in the National Hockey League, on a Disney TV show, on Jeopardy, and on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
A deputy sheriff in Spotsylvania was indicted in the shooting of gay black man Isaiah Brown that left him grievously wounded.
But there is progress in Minnesota, Virginia, Kentucky, and Philadelphia.
But setbacks in Wyoming, Texas, and California.
Do you think people are putting little push pins in maps as we list these locales?
We do.
But there is a good big breakthrough in the funding of PrEP for All in the United States. So we'll talk about that, too.
So we start in Arkansas, where the ACLU went into court on behalf of four trans teens, their families, and two doctors. And they got a U.S. District Court to issue a bench decision blocking that law from going into effect on July 28th that bars trans health care for young people.
Now, this is a similar decision to what we saw in Tennessee recently, where a court blocked a law that the legislature had passed and the governor had signed mandating signs in restaurants and other businesses about bathroom gender neutral availability. So this is now two decisions from lower federal courts saying these laws that you're hearing about that are passing all over the country are discriminatory. And we hope to continue this. Now, of course, the right wing is going to appeal all these decisions and try to get the Supreme Court to overturn them. And these are not final decisions in these cases. These are just injunctions against them going into effect while the cases are being heard. But getting this injunction is a good indication that the court does not like these laws to begin with.
Yeah, we do certainly better on that than we do on voting rights. And then we go to the Catholic Church, my old outfit. The top administrator of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Monsignor Jeffrey Burrill, B-U-R-R-I-L-L, has resigned after a Catholic media site told the conference that it had access to cell phone data that showed he was a regular user of Grindr and frequented gay bars and bathhouses. He was the general secretary. Now, of course, this isn't shocking that somebody does this in the Catholic hierarchy. 80% of the curia at the Vatican is homosexual, but they're all hypocrites.
Well, far be it for me to defend a Catholic Monsignor, but he didn't break any laws. He didn't molest anyone. He didn't abuse children. He didn't do anything like that. He was simply sexually active.
And you get kicked out if it is found out that you do it.
I get it. I just want
to. I shouldn't even say that. It's not if it's found out, because they all know about each other. They all have boyfriends and they share social occasions with each other. All the bishops, many of the bishops. But, you know, if it gets in the press, it's over.
Yeah. Well, this guy also, according to the stories, and we don't have the final word on this yet, but he was using Grindr not only on a daily basis, but in meetings of the U.S. Conference of Catholic.
Very addictive, apparently. One thing I haven't tried, but I'm retired.
No one would know. And frequenting gay bars. So he was not exactly being discreet. But as you say, none of them are.
All right. All right. We're going to talk about a lot of people we lost this week. And just as we finished the show last week, we learned of the death of Sally Gearhart, pioneering lesbian activist in out of San Francisco. She's died at the age of 90. Now, in 1973, she was the first out lesbian to receive tenure, a tenure track position at San Francisco State University. In the mid-70s, she was co-chair of the Council on Religion and the Homosexual. And in 77, she was one of the principal subjects of that groundbreaking documentary about all of us called Word is Out. But she was probably most famous for her role with Harvey Milk fighting as they were sort of almost like the co-chairs, the mom and pop of the fight against Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative, an initiative that would have banned gay teachers and anyone who supported gay rights would have been banned. So we want to show you a clip from those days when they were arguing together, starting with Harvey, then her, of the Briggs Initiative.
There are already laws on the books to protect our children. Everybody from superintendent of the schools, Wilson Robbs, to Jerry Brown, to newspaper editors across the state, agree that indeed we have the laws to protect our children. I was born of heterosexual parents. I was taught by heterosexual teachers in a fiercely heterosexual society with television ads and newspaper ads, fiercely heterosexual, a society that puts down homosexuality. And why am I homosexual if I'm affected by role models? I should have been a heterosexual. And no offense meant, but if teachers are going to affect you as role models, there'd be a lot of nuns running around the streets today.
Sometimes I think what we were faced with in Proposition 6 was not so much a conflict of values as two sets of fears. The incredible fears that the gay community had, all of us, that here we were being stomped on by what was turning out to be the moral majority. I mean, our very lives were being, you know, threatened. The ways that we live, what our lifestyle is, and our reaction was extreme, and it should have been extreme. But then when you get into the other person's shoes, you figure that there was a lot of fear on the part of the fundamentalists as well. I mean, when you've lived your entire life believing in a certain social structure, believing in certain sex roles, believing in the ways that men and women should relate to each other, believing in the family, you know, believing in what God, what you believe God says should be the way human beings should relate within the family structure. And all of a sudden, there are these perverts out here saying that there are ways to live that are different from that, and that furthermore it's great and beautiful and true and good, then you're threatened. And the very fabric of what this nation is supposed to be made up of, in the eyes of the fundamentalists, was actually being attacked, or is actually being attacked by gay people.
And that fight continues. She was so brilliant and articulate and thoughtful in the way she put things. You know, that campaign started off, we were going to get 20% of the vote. But eventually, the President of the United States came out against it. Ronald Reagan, who was the former governor, came out against it.
Wasn't he still governor when he came out against it? It was before he was president. Late 70s.
No, Brown was governor.
All right, but it was before he was president, but he had a lot of standing. Right.
President Carter came out against it.
Yeah. Reagan's opposition to very, very important and powerful.
He was good for the gays when he was president. You might remember the AIDS crisis.
Yeah, but
she helped establish the women's land, all-female community in Willits, California, where she lived most of the rest of her later years. A documentary on her is nearing completion, and we will link to it in our email.
She also was very involved in writing science fiction, and she had a formula for world peace and success, which was that the male population of the world should be reduced to 10%.
All that's needed.
Keep a few around, but really, now, I can't swear that female power is in the end the answer, but it it's amusing to think that she came up with that.
The New York City Council will be majority women this coming year.
We'll see how that goes.
Now, not LGBT, but also a firebrand civil rights activist, Gloria Richardson, has died at the age of 99. Now, that picture is famous because in the demonstration on the eastern shore of Maryland, where she was very active, the National Guard was called in, and she just pushed that rifle away and the bayonet. And she developed quite a reputation as a radical. She was supposed to speak at the March on Washington in 1963. She gets to the microphone. She says hello. And the NAACP pulls it away from her because they don't want her to speak. It was terrible because she did form a branch of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, but would not commit to nonviolence because she said, look, if we're attacked, we're going to have to fight back.
Yeah, she was extremely fierce and stuck to her values throughout her life. And she's one of the people who wasn't in the center like King or even she was to the left of Malcolm X.
Yes.
And so we don't hear about people like that often enough. And well, so we wanted to highlight her.
She still had that in her late 30s. She died at 99, and she moved to New York and became basically someone who worked for the Department of Aging and other things, lived a rather quiet life up here, right amongst us.
We lost other people this last week, too. You know all about the building collapse, the condo collapse in Miami Beach. Well, it turns out that a prominent lesbian was also killed in that collapse. Teresa Velasquez, 36 years old, senior vice president at Live Nation. She was visiting her parents in the condo when the collapse happened. They all died. She was well known as a lesbian activist within her music world. She was a DJ at the New York City Pride a couple of years ago and all over the world and well known as an out and progressive and fierce person who was leading the way.
And then there was Matt George, 26 years old, the co-host of the big podcast She Rates Dogs, was killed in a hit-and-run incident in Los Angeles. He did the show with Michaela Oakland. He was hailed for his vulnerability and his humor. The police are offering a $50,000 reward for info on the hit-and-run driver.
He was very well known and loved for his sort of funny, offbeat dating stories. And I'm struck by the fact that I heard this story, young guy gets killed in this hit and run. But it took a couple of days before I found buried in a story somewhere that he was gay. It just was not part of the story when it first broke.
And these kinds of accidents have been happening a lot more since the pandemic. There's been a lot, especially right here in New York. The statistics are terrible.
Yeah.
Sort of another death. Philadelphia, the Philly Pride has dissolved, as we told you about Boston. So in Philadelphia, a group of black and brown LGBTQ plus leaders have gotten together in Philly to plan a new Philadelphia Pride event and maybe a new Pride organization, similar to what Reclaim Pride does here and around the world. They're looking at October and June events.
Yeah, this is going to be a ACT UP Philly, the Philadelphia Trans March, the Disrupt Philly have agreed to support this effort, which will be, as you say, led by black and brown activists. No cops, black and brown leadership, accessible to all, welcoming to all, free, and offering HIV education as part of the event. So we look forward to that. And this is a movement that's starting to revert from these corporate extravaganzas back to people's marches that represent and highlight all people and build community.
Not dead, but threatened with violence in Wyoming was Michaela Oz, a transgender magician who was supposed to do shows at libraries in Gillette and the city of Wright, What was canceled when some townspeople found out that she was transgender. So the library canceled it out of safety concerns. She says she does a family-friendly show with no mention of sexuality, but got threatened with abuse. But she also got a lot of love and support, but no job. The deputy county attorney is investigating the threats.
And speaking of threats, there's this crazy stuff going on in L.A., around a Korean spa, the Wii Spa, W-I, Wii, there were rumors that a trans woman had been using the spa and was in the locker rooms. And the right-wingers, the QAnon type, showed up and recorded a video in the lobby of the spa saying, oh, you know, this trans woman's there and this is horrible and this is anti-woman and whatever, with no proof. There's a great question about whether there was anyone actually there, but the Wii Spa employees came out and talked to the right winger on camera and said, look, we are a non-discriminatory facility. We follow the law. We're not allowed to discriminate against anyone, and we welcome everybody in these situations, and trans people who are women are perfectly welcome in the women's spaces. And the right wing has ginned up all this fear and anger, and it has turned into violent QAnon protests at the spa. The police have been there in riot gear, shooting rubber bullets at people at point blank range. There's now a big dispute with whether the cops are overreacting and being inappropriate. And it's just insane out there.
As I was going to say, if you haven't noticed, people are out of their minds. But better news from Philadelphia, where now in the new school year, every building will have at least one single stall gender-neutral restroom.
That is good news. And in Montana, in other trans-related news, trans people, along with the ACLU, are filing suit against a new Montana law that requires proof of surgery to change your gender ID. This is really going backwards.
Unnecessary and cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
In
along the same lines, in California and Indiana, a bad decision and a good decision about trans rights and issues. In California, the Court of Appeals says that nursing home workers have a free speech right to misgender trans residents at the nursing home.
Well, the funny thing is, the first the court said, well, the law is you have to admit them according to their gender, but you don't have to call them by their names.
Crazy. So trans activists and lawyers are describing this as legitimizing harassment. The court said, you know, it may just be workers' way of expressing their disagreement with trans people. And the trans community is saying, nonsense, this is violent harassment to do this. So I think we're going to hear more on that.
It was a 3-0 decision.
It's going to go farther. And in Indiana, a court said a teacher cannot misgender students, that is harassment.
In Minnesota, the Republican Senate wouldn't act on a ban on conversion therapy, so the Democratic governor, Tim Walz, did it by executive order. 20 other states do so. Major cities in Minnesota had already banned it.
And they're continuing to have controversy at school board meetings in Virginia. In Fairfax County, the school board has adopted a new student rights and responsibilities.
Now take a look at that board. I think it's all women and one gay man.
I see the guy. Yes.
Well, that is my appearances. I am not judging anybody's gender identity.
It is a diverse group of women racially, too, but they have adopted a new progressive, appropriate, trans-protecting guideline of student rights and responsibility.
Well, the gay guy, Carl Frisch, championed it, and he gave a brilliant speech about it, which I will include in our email, which you can sign up for at gayusatv.org. Just go to our website, sign up.
But in Kentucky, the Democratic governor, Andy Beshear, who sometimes does things we like and sometimes doesn't, has canceled a sexual orientation non-discrimination clause in a contract with Baptist Sunrise Children's Services, supposedly on the basis of the Supreme Court decision that allowed the Catholic Services Agency in Philadelphia to not work with same-sex parents in foster care. So they're using that as an excuse to re-up their contract with the Baptists in Kentucky, who also say they will not work with same-sex parents. Now, that wasn't the Philadelphia decision. The Philadelphia decision was you're allowed to not contract with religious discriminatory agencies, but you have to be consistent across the board, and they weren't, and therefore they lost that case.
Right.
But now, again, it's being misinterpreted. And
well, better news in Kentucky. Fort Mitchell, population 8,257, is the 23rd municipality in the state to ban discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. City Council vote was unanimous. You may have noted that Senator Mitch McConnell from there continues to use the filibuster to block consideration of the Equality Act nationwide.
Among other things. So didn't they have a meeting on the Equality Act in this last...
There was a tele-meeting with all the coalition of groups, right? And they're saying, call your senators. And some of their senators were on the call, and the congresspeople. But nobody has a strategy. You can't pass it unless you get rid of the filibuster, and maybe not even then. And, of course, what we continue to be worried about, and our groups will not answer the question, what are you willing to trade away to get the Equality Act? And, of course, if they do trade anything away, it won't be the Equality Act.
I don't think anything gets traded away these days. That used to be the fine art of legislating, but it just doesn't happen anymore.
Well, I'm for you know, reasonable things that don't cut anybody's rights. You want to use certain language that clarifies things, fine. But, you know, but don't you're going to exempt us from certain categories or something? Anyway, all right.
Let's go to sports news. That's more uplifting these days, starting with the National Hockey League. I'm sorry, it's the middle of July, and we're talking about hockey. But nonetheless, that was the big headline this week. Luke Prokop, who 19 years old, came out. He's playing in a minor league team, the Calgary Hitmen in the Western Hockey League. But he has been drafted by the Nashville Predators.
An unfortunate name.
Well, they're very aggressive in these male sports. The Nashville Predators have drafted him, and he's expected to move up to them in the next year or two. But he came out. And
they said he was lying in bed and deleting a dating app for the fourth or fifth time. And they said, I'm not a Catholic bishop. I don't have to do this. And he got extremely frustrated because he couldn't be his authentic self. So he said, enough is enough. I'm accepting who I am.
And the love that has been showered on this kid.
I just hope he has a positive effect on the state of Tennessee.
Well, that would be nice, but he's not there yet. He's still in Canada. He's originally from Edmonton, Alberta, but he, with any luck, he'll end up eventually in Nashville. And yes, maybe he can have an effect. By the way, as the Olympics are opening, the International Olympic Committee confirmed that they will not be having any problem with Laurel Hubbard, the trans woman from New Zealand, as a contestant in the weightlifting competition.
Right? A problem with the Delta variant of the COVID.
I heard this morning they still could cancel the Olympics.
Absolutely.
They've started.
One of the Olympics said that. All right. In Sports Illustrated, the first trans model is on the cover of the swimsuit issue, Lena Bloom. She said, this moment heals a lot of pain. We have waited millions of years to show up as survivors and be seen as full humans.
Very nice. Which one next? Sue Bird. Sue Bird, wife of Megan Rapinoe. Sue on the right, Megan on the left. But Sue, who is a basketball player, Megan, of course, is a soccer player. But Sue is on an Olympic U.S. basketball team, and she has been chosen to be one of the flag bearers for the U.S. at, I guess, the opening ceremonies.
Yes, and she's the oldest player in the WNBA at the age of 40.
Well, still a star. But one of, you know, we've told you there are like 142 out athletes that we know of from around the world in the Olympics. And some of them are couples. And one is engaged softballers, one from Mexico, one from the U.S. On the left, Anissa Ortiz, and on the right, Amanda Chittister from the U.S., Mexican on the left. And they're engaged, but they're competitors against each other in the Olympics. I think there are some riders, horseback riders, who are a couple who are competing, and some others, too.
Equestrians.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for.
In Pittsburgh, the Riverhounds SC soccer team is discontinuing promotions with Chick-fil-A after complaints from a fan group that bases fundraisers for LGBT causes around the team's games.
And at Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, the students are petitioning against having Chick-fil-A on campus. They say not only are they homophobic, but the food's not that good. It's, of course, not the reputation, never having had a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
Right.
Lindsey Graham, up in arms at Notre Dame, potentially canceling Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. What a guy.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, there's a campaign to landmark Gilbert Baker's rainbow flag in Harvey Milk Plaza, which flies there. The Castro Cultural District want a variety of LGBTQ plus flags and to make it a local option. This is complicated. They say they want to put up other flagpoles with other flags.
The Gilbert Baker Foundation, which is our friends, Charlie Beal and others who are carrying on the Gilbert legacy, want to just keep the original 8-stripe, or maybe it's the 6-stripe, on the flagpole, and San Francisco wants to mix it up with a variety, and the foundation is objecting. I prefer the mixture, but we'll see. We'll see whether they get other flagpoles to
there
do that.
There is an online petition about that to, if you are so inclined. Okay.
Our old pal Joe Exotic, the Tiger King, formerly known as Joe Maldonado Passage, has had his sentence vacated on a technicality. He's the one who's in, well, you remember the whole series, but he's in jail for trying to hire someone to kill his rival, Carol Barkin. He's there on a 22-year sentence. So the sentence was vacated, but he's still in jail, and they're going to resentence him. We'll see whether he gets his sentence reduced. He claims he didn't do it. We'll keep an eye on that.
All right. Again, the horrors that transgender people face in this country. Transgender Adeline Evans was murdered, 24 years old, found dead in Port Arthur, Texas in March. May have been killed in Beaumont. The death is only being ruled suspicious. The family is up in arms and frustrated at the sluggishness of the investigation. She had ties to Houston.
And in Suitland, Maryland, black trans woman Taya Ashton, 20 years old, murdered. Beloved by her family. They were having a memorial this week with a balloon release. Police are investigating that. But, you know, we're in the number known trans women murders this year, plus others. We're past 30. We're into the 30s.
We don't do enough for transgender people. You know, we told you about Argentina. They've got to set aside 1% of jobs in the federal government for them. But in Ohio, Margie's Closet opened in June, a thrift shop to help trans, non-binary, and gender-expansive people, offering clothing and emotional support. They were featured on Good Morning America. They're on the border between Lakewood and Cleveland. Nice story.
Well, you talk about what we need to do. Cornell University has been doing lately something called the What We Know Project, which is some excellent research. You should look that up if you're interested. And their latest report says that BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color, LGBTQ, are twice as likely to face discrimination as white LGBTQ people. They have poorer health situations, economic insecurity, higher suicide rates, and that BIPOC people are 42% of self-identified LGBTQ people and only 32% of straight people. So BIPOC people are a higher percentage, in fact, of LGBTQ people. And of the LGBTQ people in the South, 51% are Black.
Well, in Atlanta, go to some crime news here. Police arrested three for beating and abusing a 12-year-old for his sexual orientation. This was captured on social media and posted. They have been charged with cruelty to children, and one of them for battery. The child has been placed with Children's Services.
In California, in L.A., the trial has begun of Ed Buck.
Over now.
Is it?
No, when you read what the developments are.
Well, he's the one who's usually described as a major Democratic donor for years, but he's been in the news for years because he ran a little meth and sex operation at his house where he would seduce mostly gay Black men who were of lower economic status to come to his house where he would shoot them up with meth and sexually abuse them and then kill them.
So he filmed what he was doing on 2,400 videos of his sexual encounters, 1,500 of which include drug use. He faces 9 felony counts, 2 for distribution of drugs and resulting in deaths of Jemai Moore, 26, and Timothy Dean, 35, who were gay Black men.
Now, he's being defended by Chris Darden, the famous former prosecutor in the O.J. Simpson trial. Let's hope he's as successful against defending Ed Buck as he was prosecuting O.J. Not. But Darden's explanation is that these guys died of other underlying causes, not the fact that... And we have an update on what's happening in Spotsylvania, Virginia, where a gay Black man, Isaiah Brown, had been shot in his driveway by a cop who a couple of hours earlier had given him a ride home. And then when Isaiah called the police because of a domestic dispute at his house, that same cop showed up and ended up shooting Isaiah. And the cop has now been indicted by a grand jury.
We shot him 8 to 10 times.
Terrible. And in California, they will allow death certificates to indicate someone as non-binary. And in New York City, there are just more and more reports, especially in Brooklyn and Queens, of anti-LGBTQ violent attacks. I can't even enumerate them. They're coming so fast and furious, but it's
what's going on?
What is going on? That's a lot of what we've reported today, and it's not good.
No.
All right. Should we go to international news?
Well, more on the whole Hungary-Poland situation. The European Commission, executive arm of the European Union, is taking legal action now against Hungary and Poland for violations of fundamental rights of LGBTQ people. Europe will never allow parts of our society to be stigmatized, they say. The EU targeted Hungary over demand that the publisher of a children's book with LGBTQ content include a disclaimer warning of behavior deviating from traditional gender roles. Now, Poland must respond to the EU inquiry on the impact of its LGBTQ-free zones. They have 2 months to respond. That's an awful long time. If they fail to correct, the EU could take them to the European Court of Justice, which can impose financial fines.
Well, I'd say it's about time they're going after them like this, but I don't have a ton of confidence at meaningful consequences for these.
They're also going after them in Poland over the destruction of their courts.
Yeah, well, here, you know, we talked and you predicted this last week, I think. The European Court of Human Rights ordered Russia to recognize same-sex relationships and marriages performed elsewhere. And Russia is just saying, the hell with you. We're not going to pay any attention to you.
They say it's in their constitution, along with allowing Vladimir Putin to run for two more six-year terms after 2024.
And when those are
out, he'll be dead.
He'll be granted more of those terms, I'm sure.
Horrible story out of Corsica in the town of Luri, L-U-R-I. A gay couple, Mikael and Benoit, were dancing at a bar with each other and with the boyfriend's brother and his wife and his sister. They were surrounded by 60 people, mostly teens, 15 to 20. We have a picture who made fun of them, called them the F word. They left the bar. 20 followed and beat them to the ground. 60 watched the attack and did nothing. The police are investigating. The men were just visiting for the Bastille Day holiday.
In Nigeria, in Kamo, which is the second largest city, the cops arrested five gay men just arbitrarily, no reason. More danger for gay people around the world. And
this was the Islamic police essentially doing it.
Sharia law people. Yes. And in Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania, we have found that U.S.-funded health clinics are secretly offering conversion therapy to gay people. And by offering, of course, we mean strongly encouraging.
Let's put a stop to that. In Cameroon, a judge ordered the release of two trans women who spent 5 months in a men's prison, arrested for, quote, attempting homosexuality while eating at a restaurant.
They were eating at lunch outdoors.
They were reported solely for wearing clothes that aligned with their gender identity. They were beaten and taunted by police and other inmates, sentenced to 5 years in prison. They were released pending, but they've only been released pending appeal. Shakiro there is a social media influencer and writes about being transgender. Local activists raise money to cover their fines and necessities. In Cameroon, 24 arrests of LGBTQ people this year.
And I don't think we mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, that in the crackdown, the protests in Cuba in the last couple of weeks and government crackdown, the crackdown included closing the LGBT newspaper and arresting the editor and other LGBT activists. So we're getting caught up in this fight in Cuba, too.
Right. Here's a complex story from the United Kingdom. A mother is suing a primary school for allegedly forcing her four-year-old to participate in a pride event at the Hevers Farm School in London. Her name is Izzy Montague, said she could not opt him out despite her Christian objections to pride. Now, the school's head said the event was a celebration of what makes the children proud about themselves or what makes them or their families special. So the word pride is now toxic to the religious right, just like rainbows. Now, when Montague first met with a staffer to discuss her complaint, the staffer wore a T-shirt that read, "Why be racist, sexist, homophobic, or transphobic when you could just be quiet?" She took the kid out of the school.
4 years old. Well, in London this weekend, on the 24th at 1 p.m., the Reclaim Pride March will take place, gathering at Parliament Square. So if you want to be part of the alternative People's March in London and you're there this weekend, that's where you should be. And also from the U.K., an announcement that, and the U.S., Meghan Markle and David Furnish, Elton John's husband, are going to co-executive produce an animated series called Pearl about a 12-year-old girl, her heroic adventures, finding her power, and it's inspired by historical women. So this is...
In Peru, there were two anti-gay candidates running for president, and the leftist won, Pedro Castillo, 51. He opposes same-sex marriage, which they're supposed to do under the court order. He said, today, though, we must teach the children that we are all equal before the law, but didn't include us.
Well, let's see what equal is defined as in Peru. But in Chile, today, Wednesday, as we're taping, the Senate is expected to okay a same-sex marriage bill. Then it goes to the Chamber of Deputies. The word is that they are going to pass this, as they are mandated to do by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. And we'll see whether they follow through and whether Peru will obey that court order.
Okay.
AIDS news. Well, first, in COVID news, there's a report that HIV-positive people, especially older people with living with HIV, are more at risk of death from COVID, that they definitely need the vaccines, maybe boosters of the vaccines, and really quick treatment of their COVID symptoms in ways that perhaps President Trump got, and that they are at risk even if they are on antiviral medications, that their immune systems are vulnerable enough even if they're on good antiviral meds, that they need really special attention. So if you are living with HIV, please, please get fully vaccinated and watch your health.
And yet all the masks seem to be off among the vaccinated in many places, hitting summer vaccinated tourists in Provincetown and just about everywhere else. As I said, about 8,000 in New York City vaccinated people have gotten breakthrough infections. There was just this huge outbreak there. Dozens of people who went to Provincetown so far are getting none of the infections are life-threatening, but the people infected can transmit it to others.
And this outbreak was noticed around the 4th of July weekend and the crowds that showed up in Provincetown there.
Well, so, we're burying the headline. The federal government has announced that almost all health insurers must cover PrEP, the HIV prevention pill, with no cost sharing, including for the drug itself and for clinic visits and lab tests. So this means that Truvada and Descovy, the two approved drugs, should now be free for almost all insured individuals. Or to qualify for Descovy, the physician has to argue that you especially need it. 60 days to comply with the mandate and stop charging out-of-pocket fees by January 1st at the latest. They're calling this a game changer.
AIDS activists are very excited about this, but also point out that not everyone is insured, and this is an order to insurers. So it still leaves a hole for those who are not the beneficiaries of insurance.
Okay. There's a new documentary on the COVID experience of LGBTQ marginalized people in Chicago. It's called Seguinos Aquí. Pride, Pandemic, and Perseverance. It's going to be at the Chicago Historical Museum in person and on Facebook on Thursday. Well, if you'll miss it, we'll send a link to that and the trailer. It deals with the inequities that we're talking about.
In Missouri, the governor has signed a new modernization bill on HIV criminalization. He did it without telling anyone, because evidently that would be political death in Missouri, which is the epicenter of the COVID epidemic at the moment because people are not vaccinated. So he's doing this on the sly. So it tweaks some of the law about minor changes about what you're liable for if you have sex as someone who is HIV positive. So an activist said, the bill is trash, but congratulations anyway.
Wow. All right.
There is an ongoing effort to ameliorate these prosecutions of people living with HIV for living their lives, including having a sex life. The laws often do not take into account the actual practices and whether people are having sex safely, whether their partners get infected, who's responsible for what. And the idea of criminalizing this, especially in a day and age when people can live long, healthy lives on medication, is insane. You know, well, we don't criminalize other diseases.
Maybe to get people's attention, we put up a bill to criminalize the transmission of COVID by, especially by the non-vaccinated. Put up the bill and let people start arguing about that. Maybe they'd say, oh, maybe this HIV stuff is crazy.
You're an optimist, Andy.
Well, all right. Entertainment news?
Sure.
Robin Roberts, I think. Is she the first out lesbian to host Jeopardy this week? I know Anderson Cooper did it a few weeks ago.
I haven't been following Jeopardy.
Okay, but there she was. She's having a good time.
Yeah. There's a new show coming to Amazon online this fall called Tampa Bays, B-A-E-S. It's going to be a new lesbian reality series set in Tampa. This is similar to, or the new version of the Real L Word from 10 years ago or whenever it was. Personally, I prefer the fictionalized lesbian version of the L Word. The Real Life Lesbian series was not a hit and wasn't very good. I hope the Tampa one is better. But this is the cast there, which might give you an idea of what to look for. 8 episodes in the fall on Amazon.
Well, in the realm of fact and fiction, Seb and Carlos, characters on High School Musical, played by Joe Serafini and Frankie Rodriguez, sang the first ever same-sex love song on a Disney show to Seb. Carlos reassuring him that he's not just dating him because he's the only other gay student at the school. Rodriguez and Serafini are a real-life couple. The showrunner is a guy named Tom Federle, an out gay man.
The song is called In a Heartbeat, and I like the title of the show, High School Musical, The Series.
And I will link to the song, it's very short, in our email, which you can sign up for at gayusatv.org.
Oh, so Disney does its first same-sex love song and it's short?
Well, it's integrated into the, maybe they're only showing a short segment, but yeah. That's what I have online, 30 seconds.
Now, you went to something this week that I missed, and I'm jealous.
Well, yes, I saw a screening of a wonderful documentary about Brent Nicholson Earl. There he is there in the front. Now, of course, right next to him is the great producer, Ted Snowden, and to his left is our friend Shep Wannan. Nobody's wearing a mask. We were all supposed to be vaccinated. I did wear a mask.
Someone's anyway. Wearing a mask. One person's wearing a mask.
I was. I'm behind the camera.
Not you.
And it's about his historic run. Brent ran around the entire perimeter of the United States, continental U.S., in the mid-1980s to raise consciousness about AIDS. It's called For the Love of Friends. He felt he had to do something. And so he did. He raised funds. He raised consciousness in little towns all across the country. And he almost killed himself. I mean, doing this, he's not in terrific shape right now, but he's smiling in this picture. So watch for it on the LGBTQ film circuit, festival circuit.
And his organization, the American Run for the End of AIDS, AREA, is still operating, still raising support for people with HIV. Brent is just, first of all, he's one of the nicest guys in the world. and just a hero for his work over decades to support people.
And the movie is, you know, of course, it's very moving. It brought back a tremendous amount of memories, and I was for Clint. But it's also hilarious. All of his friends who he got to help him with this, you know, his mother drove the car around the country, his mother, and friends had a Winnebago that, and this, and they're talking about it, and they, like, can't believe they're doing this. But they do it anyway for him.
Yeah.
And for AIDS.
Yeah. There's a movie opening in New York this week in a theater. I'm sorry these theaters are opening. I enjoy watching these movies at home online. The idea of going to a theater is
nothing. Just be calm and wait. It will come. But this one is at the IFC Center. It's a film by the great director, Agnieszka Holland. Did I say her name right? It's about a Czech herbalist.
It's called Charlatan.
Jan Mikosek. It's a true story, and his lover there in the 1950s. It's called Charlatan because he was doing herbal things, and he got in trouble with the Nazis, and then he got in trouble with the communists. And it looks fascinating. I don't really know how it all turns out, but I'm eager to see it when it comes on TV.
Well, yes. One of the magic powers he asserted was that he could look at people's urine in a clear glass bottle and diagnose everything about them.
Yeah. One of the guys interrogating me goes, sorry to tell you this, but you're going to die. Well, we all are.
I want to remind you about a movie I mentioned last week called Can You Bring It? Bill T. Jones and D-Man in the Waters. D-Man in the Waters is one of his great dance works. It's now playing in New York City theaters, and it opens this week in L.A. And we want to show you the trailer to give you a taste of this.
This is not a balletic piece. It's lyrical, but it's athletic. D-Man in the Waters is a piece by Bill T. Jones. It is considered Jones's most successful dance.
For D-Man in the Waters, Bill T. Jones.
All his movements always had some sort of meaning or task to them. And any emotion that came out, it came out of the movement.
The work was play. The play was work. The work was about changing perception.
Arnie and I were a couple. We wanted to make a community who had a mission and a direction.
That community thing changed radically when all of a sudden it was, how do we save ourselves?
You know, I remember half my phone book had died.
Recently, Arnie Zane learned he has AIDS.
Did I even see him once cry with frustration to realize that he was not going to beat it? What is D-Man? Is it alive now? Is it a cautionary tale? Is it one of inspiration?
What is our AIDS rate? What are we going through? Your generation isn't doing it. So the nine of you are going to do it. And you're going to do it each night on that stage.
What do they share that is so big that you need a piece like this to move it?
Do you dare to let the stakes really be high? No matter what happens, don't give up.
We were hurting, but our work was a way that we kept going. Let me see your hands. It's I give up or I have nothing to fear. I love you. I love you. Yeah.
It is a very emotional and moving movie, and it's a very well-constructed one. I was quite taken with it in ways I'm not always taken with movies. But it raised a very serious question, which is we had all that emotion and compulsion in the 90s with all that was going on around us and with AIDS, with LGBT rights, all of that. And it was just forcing us to act and to confront these emotions. And today, if you have a younger generation taking on doing this same piece, do they have the same impulses? Do they, certainly the world should compel them in the same ways, but I'm not sure that same urgency is there. And that's a really tough issue to grapple with.
Well, Black Lives Matter, certainly often a youth-driven movement, right?
Absolutely. But what I'm and certainly dealing with the same issues of life and death that were so and remain compelling to us. But to watch these younger people take on this specific piece, there is some question about whether they actually get it and whether they can throw themselves into it. And at some point they do cross the line and come close to that. I'm not sure they quite get there, but others may have a different opinion. But the whole movie really drew me in, and I thought was compelling. Now, also, still,
well, I remember Arnie and Bill when they became AIDS activists in the 80s when Arnie got sick and the kinds of things that they did. This sort of resonates with this with the Bret Nicholson Earl film, because it was based on a play about his life where young people portrayed him and he portrayed himself. And they all, the movie includes all their dialoguing with that period, and which they just didn't have a grip on.
And this also plays at the same time that the Alvin Ailey movie, Ailey is going wide, as they say, will be in 200 theaters nationwide by August 6th and deals with some of the same issues, some not. And it's a good compare and contrast thing to watch both the Bill T. Jones movie and the Alvin Ailey movie.
Come on, Ann. I know you want to talk about Lil Nas X.
Well, I'm very taken by the fact that the New York Times, as you see there, did this cover story last weekend on Lil Nas X and Hot Boy Summer. And I know you weren't as, amused or entertained by this, but what I liked about the piece, and I like him, and what I liked was them delving into his progression from closeted to someone who is really now asserting his gay identity and wanting to put it out there and challenge people.
Closeted, he was like 18, right? And when he started coming out,
you know? Hey, now we're worried about 4-year-olds going to Pride Parade. So it's never too early.
And we all need to have pride. We all need to wear masks again.
I am. I've never dropped it, and I'm very conscious of the need to remain self-protective and protective of others.
Yes, because that's what it's all about. We don't want to keep this pandemic humming, so to speak.
So thank you for joining us. We will be back next week. Go to gayusatv.org to read extras, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye-bye.